This podcast is a member of WGPRN, WildGamesProductions.com.
Roll for Initiative Podcast Special Insert.
This is the Roll for Initiative Podcast. I am DM Vince, sitting alongside DM Nick.
Hello, everybody.
This is Volume Number 3, Special Insert Number 10. DM Matt is still recovering from con crud, as Gen Con is finally over.
Finally over, yes.
Yeah, and Chad is recovering from, I believe he went on a big camping trip with the family, so he's got to tell us all about that when he gets back.
I thought, you know, camping trips / drinking binge, I don't know.
Well, I didn't want to include that part, but you spilled the beans, so.
Oh, sorry.
Oh. So, Gen Con's over. Oh.
Gen Con is over. Did not go, but I've seen little snippets on Facebook. Mm-hmm. People going there. I guess, you know, what's the big word is the new version of D&D.
Yeah, that's the big word. I heard everybody had a great time playing. Those who didn't play still, you know, snubbed their nose at it. Those who were part of the OSR took a look at it that went to Gen Con. They did report some good findings. So, and then I have to say that the Player's Handbook is out now, so if you happen to have a Player's Handbook for 5th edition, congratulations. The free basic D&D,
yep.
Or we're going to refer to it as 5B, because it's not basic D&D to me, because that's Mensur or Mulvey or
yeah,
even the Rules Encyclopedia, but not our D&D. So some people asked us to do a fair and balanced review, like Fox News.
Yeah, fair and balanced.
That's what we are, fair and balanced, yes.
Sure we are. Well, we got the requests, and we're going to do our best.
Yes, as they call us, roll for intelligence, remember?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So a couple people asked us to review the basic free rules that is now version number 2 as of August 12th that was off the Wizards of the Coast site. Nick and I both perused this during the past week.
Yeah.
Reading in our spare time. And we will go over things right away. Let's jump right into it.
Sure.
So let's talk about creating characters. So far, first initial take. What's your first initial look at this chapter of creating characters, Nick?
You know what? I actually like what they did as far as the step-by-step process.
Yes.
Of someone who was really completely unfamiliar with role-playing games and how they worked. I thought they did a very good job with that. I really do. I mean, they did a good job of explaining how to build a character. You choose your race, you choose a class, then, you know, you determine your ability scores, and then you describe your character. Some pretty basic steps, and there are some sub steps under that. You know, you choose your equipment, and that's pretty much it. There's some other subsets below that. I thought it was a little interesting that they kind of mix things up around where I'm used to you roll your ability scores, then you choose your race and class.
Yeah.
Now they have you choose your race, your class, and then you do your ability scores. So that's a little bit that's backward in my for me to do. But still, how they explain how things go along, I thought they did a very good job.
Well, remember, with our edition, everything is based on the role that you get. So sometimes your role doesn't qualify for a class or a race. That's why you roll first with first edition. So this is, everybody can do whatever they want, so just go ahead and pick your race and your class.
Right. There, as far as I can tell, there are no prerequisites for classes. You just roll up your ability scores, and yes, there's a preferred ability score, but there's no, like, minimums or maximums as far, and there's no minimum class requirements, as far as I can tell.
None that I can tell either. And the standard 4D6 is the preferred method. Drop the lowest.
Yeah, 4D6, drop the lowest, which is fine.
Yeah. You know. And it gives you the chance to use the point array or the standard list of 15, 14, 13, 12, 10, and 8.
Right. So, yeah, they have a few different variances. Then, so you choose your race, then your role, you choose your class, and in this version, the free PDF, you only get 4 classes: fighter, cleric, wizard, and rogue. No magic user or thief. Why they call it rogue, I don't know, or whatever. Anyway.
But that's neither here nor there, so.
Yeah, it's neither here nor there. That's just a matter of semantics, what you like.
So let's start right at the races.
Yeah.
All right, so let's get to that. Is that starts on Chapter 2, Races, page 11 of the free PDF. Goes over basically choosing a race, how to choose the race, what benefits you get from the race, what alignment they tend to go to, which is really good information. The speed of the race, like how fast, how many squares you move, the languages, mm-hmm. and then... One thing I cannot stand is why do you have to have sub races?
Well, you know what? We still even had that with first edition.
I know.
Like, for example, with dwarves, you had hill and mountain dwarves.
I never used those things.
Well, some people did. So they kept that in there. I do like that they have examples of how that particular race is. For example, with dwarves, they give like a paragraph from Salvatore's Crystal Shard book about the dwarves. And they give like a brief, you know, page or two overview of how the society of dwarves, how they think. And they really break it down to where this is how dwarves are. You know, they're short and stout. They have long memories, but long grudges. I'm just going by the bullet points. They have clans and kingdoms. They're all about like treasure. So, to be honest, they actually stuck with the old trope of a Tolkien type dwarf in this version of the game.
One thing I did notice that you were talking about before the show is they brought back the whole how they feel different about different races.
Yes, they did. They actually have little. There's like these like kind of greenish little square paragraphs off to the side where I guess they're kind of like little
sidebars, I guess.
Sidebars, yeah. I guess you want to best describe it as. And like, for example, like a dwarf, how they feel about different races. For like elves, for example, there's like a sample quote. They say, "It's not wise to depend on the elves. No telling what an elf will do next. When a hammer meets the orc's head, they're apt to start singing and pull out a sword. They're flighty and flivorous, you know, and going on." And they have little things about how they feel about halflings and humans. So I think those are pretty cool things, at least for someone who wasn't familiar with the game, or let alone wasn't familiar with fantasy genre in general. I suppose they have to put this stuff in because I guess they're kind of dumbing it down. So
I don't know about
dumbing it down, but I guess they want to give some good examples at least, so they get a feel for your character.
So right off the bat, they'll give you some name examples, and then we go to every race has certain things that they have, their traits.
Mm-hmm.
So, dwarves automatically get a +2 to constitution to increase their score.
Yeah.
What happened to the minus?
No minuses.
Yeah, no minuses.
No minuses for anybody.
Nope.
Because everybody's special.
They have they have their abilities. And then, if you... I don't understand, can you have to be a sub-race, or can you not... You don't have to pick a sub-race? That's the part I really didn't get.
From what I understand, you can...
I guess you'd have to
choose one of the sub-races, either hill, mountain, and they have a little blurb about the Dugar.
I don't think you could pick the Dugar.
I don't think you can. That might be something in the player's handbook. I don't know. But it looks like you pick hill or mountain dwarf.
Do you see that last line of the Dugar special ability?
Yeah, they have innate magical abilities to become invisible and to temporarily grow to giant size. So
good to know.
Good to know. Yeah. Yes.
So you can
totally useless right here. Yeah. I mean, it's like, oh, I want to play that, but we don't have anything on it. Oh.
Yeah, that's where you get the player's handbook, probably.
Yeah, it might be in there.
Yeah.
So then we get
the two sub-races, Hill Dwarf and Mountain Dwarf. And, of course, you get more of a bonus. You get a wisdom score bonus by one. And your maximum hit points accrues by one, and it increases by one every time you get a level. So not only do you get the plus two to your constitution bonus, which increases your hit points, you get the plus one also for your dwarven toughness for being a Hill Dwarf.
Oh, also, by the way, I like this. When it comes to ability scores in this game, over time, when your character increases in level, you can increase your ability scores.
Well, yeah, we'll get to that when we get to classes. So, but all right. So, I'm looking at the Hill Dwarf. It does mention Dragonlance settings, so I assume there's they're just jamming all the settings into one thing now.
Well, I guess they're giving examples of what they're. What they're talking about, like a Hill Dwarf in Faerûn, which is Forgotten Realms, they're known as Gold Dwarves.
Yeah, okay.
And then so I guess just different names depending on the fantasy setting you use.
True. Mountain Dwarf, next one. You get 2 to your strength score.
Yep.
Then you automatically have, you're automatically proficient with light and medium armor. So no matter what class you take, you're proficient with those two armors now.
Yes.
And that rounds off the dwarf as an example. And then we got an elf. They do the same thing for it.
Right.
I'm not going to get into the elf too much. It's pretty much standard, the same thing. Add two
pretty much the same thing. Yeah.
No minuses anywhere.
Yeah, no negatives.
Let's jump to the humans, though.
Yeah.
Humans will get a bonus to 2 points to every stat. No, it's 1 point every stat.
Point to every stat. And I thought that was interesting. I'm like, why would you do that for humans?
Give them something.
I suppose one of the things that everybody said about first edition AD&D is like, why would you want to play a human? Well, one of the things that balances out humans to other races is if you use a level limits, they're unlimited in all the classes. Well, in this edition, you don't have that level limits. There are no level limits, and even humans can multi-class, so I guess to make them more appealing is to give them bonus to everything.
Yeah.
So I guess that's a way of their idea of game balance, I suppose.
Maybe. And it gives you a little tidbit on the very bottom of humans in case you're want to use the player's handbook, which I assume where this is going from. If you use feats and skills, they also gain one extra feat, and they also gain a proficiency in one skill of your choice. This doesn't cover anything with skills or anything, because it's basic edition, so...
Right.
But that's covered more in the player's handbook.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they split humans up into various different names and...
Well,
ethnicities and...
What they did, really, is... Despite the references to Dragonlance and World of Greyhawk, Forgotten Realms is going to be the default campaign setting.
Yeah.
I can tell you right from the get-go. I can tell from the basic rules here. So,
but there's no benefit.
What they did, what?
There's no benefit of the sub-races.
No, and I was just going to say, yeah, they just give different names, how their hair and skin color is, and that's pretty much it. There's no benefit of being what they call a Ilushkan versus a Damaran or whoever they are. So, yeah, there's no benefit or difference as far as ability scores in a game mechanic sense between the different races.
Can't you guys just look how you want them to look?
Why not?
Why
does that have to be defined in the rules? I don't know.
Do I need to shoehorn myself into something here? No. Why can't I just be like, a big tall guy with red hair or a black guy with long dreads? What do I need to friggin' put myself into one of these categories?
Right. I know they had something like this in World of Greyhawk when you had the 83 box set.
Mm-hmm.
You could, for humans, they had the four different sub-races of humans, and you could determine... what from where, what country you were from, what mixed race stock you were or whatever, but it was all just flavor stuff. And it, again, this is flavor stuff here. It doesn't do anything as far as game mechanic wise to make your character aim more better than anything else. I guess, again, just to give people an idea of what's available in this game as far as different human races, what you can have. I guess to give, inspire your imagination, I suppose.
I guess if you're really that concerned about it, yeah. I mean, I'm not really concerned about what my character looks exactly, but some people are. You're right.
Yeah, some people might like that. I don't know. I guess I'm just kind of throwing that out there.
All right, so let's go now to the next chapter of character creation, classes.
Yes.
Immediate...
Yeah. Oh,
let's start simple here. Four basic classes, like Nick said. We have our cleric, we have our fighter, we have our rogue, and we have our wizard. The most immediate change that we've seen, Nick...
Uh-oh. Yes, the cleric, right from the get-go. Well, I guess we could talk in general. Experience points, right?
Well, let's back it up for 1 second. Let's talk about hit die.
Oh, yeah! Yeah, hit dice. Wizards and rogues, wizard slash magic user, rogue slash thief, all get a boost up in a hit dice. So, rogue has a D8 hit dice, and a wizard is a D6.
Mm.
So... For all those people that cried, I'm sorry, but I guess all those people who thought playing a wizard or a thief who thought, well, their hit dice are too low, blah, blah, blah. All right, you got your wish.
Now, I do like that they did start everybody first level max hit points plus constitution.
Oh, yeah. I mean, cool because...
Yeah.
Almost everybody does that anyway, so might as well make it a rule.
What I did not like is that stupid variant rule. Actually, it's not a variant rule. The rule of you can take the average hit points if you roll too low.
Yeah, that seems a little...
That's like that whole, hey, kids, you played soccer, great game, here's your participation trophy.
Yeah, you know.
No.
So
if I was a DM, that would be the first thing I'd knock out. I don't care about the first place to hit ball. If you roll second level and you roll one, maybe I'll say, all right, roll again, just to be nice. But no, none of this average thing.
Yeah, I don't get the whole average thing either. It really doesn't make any sense to me. Just the simple fact now that they boosted the thief and magic users hit dice up a whole level, essentially. I don't know.
Well, and then experience for levels.
Yeah.
300 experience points to get to level 2?
Yeah.
What's up with that?
Yeah, looking at the, you know, for the everybody, if you have not downloaded it already, the experience points system is like what they did with starting with 3rd edition. It's one universal chart.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be honest, I hate that. Do not like it. It makes no sense to me why you have one universal chart for all your character classes.
Well,
because and my argument is this.
Yeah, go.
A thief has different abilities than, say, a magic user.
Mm-hmm.
Magic user has different abilities than the thief. It's going to take different... what they learn, part of their craft, is going to be different than the other class that someone might have. So their experiences are going to be different, and it's harder to learn a certain craft than the other. Like, for example, in first edition... Like, to be a fighter, you know, the fighter, the experience level was 0 to 2,000 experience points. You know?
Yeah.
So, rangers or paladins, it was a little bit more because what they did was a little more involved.
They did this to keep everybody on the same platform, the same level. make it simplistic, a little more easier for people to understand instead of having to worry about different experiences at different levels. It keeps the party together at the same level or range. So, I mean, I guess they probably did it that way because of that reason. I don't know exactly.
Well, yeah, and I hate that. Because I take the game as whatever makes up your character and the adventuring party is its strengths and its weaknesses.
Yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. If someone's lagging behind in a couple levels, well, you know what? They're just going to have to suck it up and do work harder, I suppose. You know? I just don't like I don't like a universal XP chart. To me, it makes no sense because that's saying that all character classes have all the same experiences, despite that the different character classes are different. It makes no sense to me. It really doesn't. I just don't like it. I understand what they're going for to have a simplified system with the experience points and everybody tracking the same thing. Mm-hmm. But then I guess you don't even write you don't even have to write experience points then on your character sheet if everybody's going to level at the same time. You know?
Well, they're not going to level at the same time. I mean, if some people miss an event, obviously they're not going to level the same as another person.
Yeah, but what if nobody misses a session?
Then
everybody's going to level at the same time every time.
Yeah.
So why even track experience points? You know?
Well, nothing really good. I have no rebuttal because I kind of agree with you in a sense, but I see why they did what they did.
Oh, I see what they did. What they did because they wanted to make it so simple that no one has to do any math.
I'm not sure.
I mean, and that's fine.
I don't think it was that really, but
I don't. I mean, right, I know they wanted to simplify it. They wanted to.
All right, we're spending a little too much time on that, Nick. Let's just move on.
Okay. I mean, I don't like the XP system in this.
That's fine. You're allowed to disagree.
Okay.
Let's jump right into the cleric class.
Yes, the cleric class. And
so they get the standard proficiencies in light armor, medium armor, and shields, but no heavy armor. Notice that.
Right.
Why is that? Well, when you're building your character, you can get the ability to pick the healing domain or sphere, do they call it? The domain of healing, or is it life?
And they call it the... Well, there's a divine domain.
Life domain. When you pick the life domain, you get armor ability. I didn't understand why that was with that, but
I don't know either. It's like, okay, you're a healer, but you get heavy armor?
Yeah.
I didn't understand that.
Okay, so then you get all simple weapons, which is pretty much standard how they had it. You can do like a mace or a warhammer, proficient, scale mail, leather armor, chain mail, proficient, obviously. Mm-hmm. Now clerics get this new thing that they add to all classes called proficiency bonus +2.
Yeah, I hope you can explain that one to me.
Basically, it's that you add that to everything you pretty much do when you make a roll.
Mm-hmm.
I think they explained that right in the beginning. Proficiency bonus. I know you pretty much add it to whatever you do on your rolls.
So whatever your proficiency roll is, then you add that bonus.
No, it's a standard across the class. Yeah, so the proficiency, I just found it right here, Nick. It basically is in the combat chapter. You were right. If you're proficient in something, you get a +2, plus whatever it says there to use.
Okay, so it's, you know, you add that modifier to it.
Yeah,
I got
it. If you're proficient in, say, a Warhammer, you get that bonus, a +2.
Okay.
All right, so yeah, that's fine. They have that across the level, and that goes up, starting at 5th level, +3, and then up at +4 at 9th. +5 at 13th, and then 17th level was +6. They also declared each individual levels as a block, like they did kind of in 4th edition.
Yeah, different tiers.
Yeah, like 1 through 4 is kind of like apprentice, and then you start becoming your own into, what is it, 5 through 10.
Yeah.
Then another block is you become an adventurer, then you become like the epic heroes in the last stages.
Yeah.
Doesn't really matter.
I don't know.
Okay, so clerics have the ability to cast cantrips now.
Yes, they do. Looking at the different spell levels for the cleric. Now starting at first level, you get 3 cantrips, and you get 2 spells at first level for a cleric along with your cantrips.
Now, cantrips, you have a certain list of cantrips that you have, and you can cast them 3 times per day, but it doesn't matter which 3. It can just be any of the 3. And any
so, yeah, essentially you can cast 9 cantrips a day.
Well, no. You can cast any cantrip as long as you have the 3 spots for it. It doesn't matter which one. You don't have to prepare it.
Oh, now, I see.
In a sense, you could be right. You could cast 9 cantrips in a day if you do your rests. According to that's another thing we'll get to shortly. But yeah, if you do your rest, you get your spells back. So.
Yeah. And clerics get 2 first level spells.
But they don't have the ability to turn undead.
Actually, they do.
I thought that was second level.
You can... Well, yeah, at second level...
Yeah.
You can channel divine energy.
Right, you channel divinity.
From your deity. Yeah. So, which how this you. Works is, like, you, whatever undead are within 30 feet when you brandish your holy symbol, they need to make a wisdom saving throw. And it says, each undead... It doesn't matter if it's a skeleton or a lich.
Yeah.
They make a wisdom saving throw. If the creature fails at saving throw, it is turned for 1 minute or until it takes any damage. So, I'm a little bit concerned about this, where a first level or a second level cleric here has a chance of turning something like a lich.
I doubt it.
Or a vampire or something like that. Because, you know, according to first edition, I can't help comparing the two. You only have a chance to, like, turn a vampire until your cleric is 6th level, and you'd have to roll a 20. So, with this, it to me, it's like, you could be throwing vampires against a second or a third level cleric, and from what I read here in the rules, if they fail their wisdom save, they're turned.
Well, I guess they're trying to do that because it's undead and you're channeling the power of your divinity. It shouldn't...
But it's a vampire.
Yeah, but they're trying to say it shouldn't be that... Because you're only second level, that your god's not going to be like, meh, I don't really care, you're second level, so I'm not going to give you the power to turn, to have your faith to turn away that monster. They're trying to say have equal footing as long as you're good with your, in good graces with your god, so.
Yeah, but it kind of diminishes the strength of undead if you think about it. I mean, where's the challenge then? If, like, even if I got a third level cleric there and he can turn these undead like nobody's business.
Well, that's not true. He could turn them, and then he has to rest before he can use it again.
Well.
So, say you have, like, I don't know, 5 vampires, a bunch of skeletons, and almost all of them fail. Well, you know what? You turn 2 of them. Okay, cool. Well, that cleric can't turn anymore until he rests.
Yeah.
So, that kind of evens it out there, because before we had kind of an unlimited amount to do it, as long as we had the say with the DM, but now it's just kind of you have to rest, so.
Yeah. And then at 5th level, you can destroy undead. Which, you had something similar in 1st edition. I mean, you can destroy... Now, that's the thing. They don't go into specifics. This is just all undead. Doesn't matter if it's a skeleton or a lich. I mean, in 1st edition, I have to compare the two, because this is where my grounding comes in. It's from 1st edition is, you know, for example, at 6th level for a cleric in 1st edition, you could, if you perform your turning undead, you destroy skeletons and zombies. Then ghouls and shadows you can turn, and then it goes up from there to whatever roll you made, then you turn them.
Yeah, but it goes by the creature rating, or the hit dice of the creature, don't forget.
That's right, but...
Which is the same thing as just putting skeleton zombie on the chart.
Yeah, so they're basically doing away with charts.
They're just trying to say that... Yeah, they're doing away with charts. Well, yeah, that sounds right.
Okay.
I'll leave it at that. So, yeah, that sounds easy enough to explain it, but...
they're doing away with the chart.
It's the same thing. It's just they're doing away with the stupid charts, that's all.
I guess it's the same thing, but it's still... From what I read, it's
what's
like...
What's the hit points of a skeleton?
I don't know. I see. That's the thing. I don't have anything to go against comparing it to monsters in this edition because we don't have a monster manual yet.
I'm talking about, well, if you get the DM's version of this that's out, that gives you monsters and it gives you like 50 pages of monsters.
Well, see, I didn't have that. I didn't have anything to compare it to. So I don't know, you know, how the undead work in this game. So
what is, first edition, what's the hit dice of a skeleton?
It's, I believe, just... Is it one or two hit dice? It's like one or two hit dice for a skeleton. So.
Yeah.
For a skeleton, it is hit dice one. Yeah.
Okay.
I think zombies are two.
Okay.
So. Yeah, zombies are two. So. So, I see they're using combat ratings still.
Well, I call them creature ratings. So.
Or creature rating, wherever they call it. So, I mean, can you have, like, more powerful versions of skeletons and weaker versions of, like, liches in this game? See, that's the thing I don't know.
Well, let's check out the... Monster DM book here that they've given us. And as my computer is running very slowly at the moment, but we'll get to this real quick.
Well, I know. It's just when looking at it for me from my perspective, it's like, well, any undead, they can destroy them? Holy crap, that's like super powerful.
So, skeletons listed in here as hit points of 13, 2d8 plus 4.
Okay.
Which doesn't tell me the creature rating.
No. But they're essentially a two-hit dice creature.
Here it is. Challenge rating is 1/4. 1/4. So, 1/4. Okay. 50 experience points for a skeleton. So, that is less than what it says there.
So you would automatically destroy them?
At 5th level, a cleric, according to this, looking at the challenge rating, I guess they call it challenge rating, like you said.
Yeah.
It is 1/4. 1/4 is less than 1/2, so that means it's destroyed.
Okay.
So, there you go.
Okay. I see what they're doing there. How they did it. They just... It's another way of doing that chart.
Yeah, it's just... They made it a little bit easier, but a little more difficult for old-timers, that's all.
Yeah, because looking at it as an old-timer, it's like, in general, all undead. It's like, what are my chances from a skeleton to, a shadow or a white, you know? Hmm. So, okay. So that was, I understand what they did there in the, do I like it? I don't know. That's, I guess, a matter of personal opinion. But I understand what they did there, yes.
Okay, so we got that established. Moving along, Divine Intervention.
Yes.
At 10th level, you have the ability to call upon your God's behalf if the need is great and they shall intervene.
Yeah. Just immediately at 10th level, just, you know, you got get the cell phone out to the Almighty and...
If your roll number is equal to or lower than your cleric's level, your deity intervenes. So at 10th level, if you roll below, 10 or below, your deity will step in.
Boy, your god is really busy then. But you can't do it again for 7 days afterwards.
But at 20th level, you call for your god, he just goes, no problem, here I come.
Yeah. Wait, it sounds like it's the genie from Aladdin. It's like, here I come. Then they I don't know. It's automatically at 20th level, your god just shows up whenever you ask. If I was the DM, some gods would be getting really, really mad.
I know when we used to do Divine Intervention with the Great Joe DM.
The Great Joe.
Great Joe. He would always give us a 5% chance, no matter where we were or what level we were.
Yeah, I mean, they're gods, you know?
He was like a 5% chance for them to listen and hear you, not saying that they would do anything about it.
In 10th level, you have a chance equal to your level. Basically, what they're saying, you have a 50% chance at 10th level. I'm like, really?
Well, it seems like 20th level is the cap.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I don't know how the player's handbook looks. I mean, I haven't read the copy that I have fully yet. But it seems that, like, the video game, like DDO, 20th level, that's the cap, and that's it. Once you're 20th level, you're epic, you're god, there's nothing better. Like, in our, we can go level 30, 40, 50, 100, 1,000, whatever.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. And if you remember from the Immortal box set, 36th level was when you would start thinking about becoming an immortal.
Yeah. Yeah, that the power creep in this is the power level in this is way different. I can see from here, like 4th edition, the same thing, the influence of console or computer role-playing games is really heavy.
Pretty much. Okay, so then you got to pick your domain, which is basically your life domain if you want to do healing spells or your life, knowledge, light, and it's basically how you get your spells.
Mm-hmm.
Much how they did in, I think they did that in 2nd edition, they started that, right?
When they started to get into, I think that was in the one supplemental book, the Skills and Powers book.
Was it? Oh, okay. I thought priests in 2nd edition had to pick domains.
I don't remember, to be honest.
Yeah, I've never really played it that much, so. So that pretty much, will round out your cleric. You can pick a different focus by picking different domains for your cleric, which makes
I do have to point this out about the cleric, though. When you're talking about your life domain, all these different special abilities, this is like what I said where I see the console influence. You know, you get a blessed healer at 6th level. When you cast a 1st level or higher healing spell, hit points to a creature other than you regain hit point. You regain hit points equal to 2 plus the spell's level. So you're healing yourself as well, from what it sounds like. And then you have Divine Strike. So at 8th level, you get an extra D8 radiant damage to the target whenever you use your weapon.
I think you meant for that plus 2. You don't get it. It's the other person gets it, plus 2 plus your level.
No, it says when you cast a spell of 1st level or higher that restores hit points to a creature other than you, you regain hit points equal to 2 plus the spell's level. As I read it...
What page is this?
This is on page 23, I think?
Okay.
Yes. Under Blessed Healer.
Oh, yeah, it's 6th level. Okay, I see what you're saying.
Yeah, they heal you as well at 6th level.
Hmm. Okay, I didn't see that.
Yeah. So you're healing yourself and others, which I don't really have a problem. Then they have this Divine Strike thing. I just keep on thinking of Diablo here, you know?
Well, most of these, I look at it and I see EverQuest or WoW.
Yeah. It's Supreme Healing.
I remember
at 17th level
being a big cleric player in EverQuest, there was a spell that you can heal the group and yourself at the same time, or heal a person and yourself at the same time.
Yeah, basically you could do that in this game. If you choose the right magic, right cleric spell along with Blessed Healer, because there's a mass healing spell in here,
mm-hmm.
That same thing can happen to you. Yeah, so.
Alright, so let's jump into the fighter. Pretty much.
Fighter?
Everything that you remember is still the same. The major difference is that you have to pick a fighting style now.
Yes.
So you're kind of shoehorned into something like archery. You get a plus two bonus attack when you make rolls with a ranged weapon. You plus two bonus to roll every time you make a ranged weapon attack. Yeah. Or you can be a defense. You gain plus one bonus AC, so you're good at defending. And you have a dueling plus two to damage rolls with that particular weapon when you're dueling with in your hand. Blah, 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 blah. Two weapon fighting.
Yeah.
Why would you bother taking anything else? Just take two weapon fighting.
Might as well, yeah. And another thing, and I think this falls in general for all the classes, is equipment. You automatically get starting equipment without spending any gold.
I've noticed that with a lot of the newer games do that. Like, I've played a lot of Dragon Age, and yeah. Dragon Age has your starting equipment is the following things. Anything else you have to purchase. Shadowrun does the same thing, too. Starting equipment, here's what you get, but you have to purchase everything else, so...
Yeah, like for cleric, you either start with a mace or a warhammer, mm-hmm. and then you choose your armor. Mm-hmm. And same thing for the fighter. You choose your weapon out of the list and your armor, and that's it. You don't have to spend any gold on beginning equipment. How easy is that?
Well, you still have to buy some food. You still have to buy some
water. No, you get a Dungeoneer's pack or the Explorer's pack at the beginning.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah, it's big, you know. It's just given to you. Here.
Everything else gets jacked up in price, I don't know.
Yeah.
All right, so you get those various fighting styles. Then you get the ability for Second Wind. Which you get during battle, you can just automatically just go, you can hulk up during battle, and you get 1d10 plus your level, your fighting level, excuse me, not just your level, because you could be multi-class, of hit points back. You only could do this once until you do a short or long rest. So basically during battle, you can do the whole Hulk Hogan thing and hulk up and get your hit points back, and then fight. Which, alright, I can kind of see that making sense for a fighter. You know, the whole adrenaline rage and stuff like that, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
That works. Okay.
I suppose so.
Action Surge. Nick, you want to give us that
one? Yeah, so at second level, you get this thing called Action Surge, where you can push yourself beyond the normal limits of movement. So when it's your turn, you can take one additional action on top of your regular action. So... And with this feature, you must finish a short or long rest before you can use it again.
And you
get at 17th level, you can do it twice.
Yeah. You get that ability starting at second level, Action Surge.
Yeah.
Second Wind is automatically at first level. And then at third level, you'll be picking a martial arts type, which kind of more further defines your character. The champion archetypes are, let's see, where are they? You get to pick one of these things, I think it is. No. Improved critical. So at third level, your critical now becomes 19 or 20.
Yeah.
Ooh. At seventh level, you can add half your dexterity, half your proficiency bonus rounded up to any strength, dexterity, or constitution check. That doesn't already make you use your proficiency bonus when you make that check. So that's kind of cool. I guess.
Yep.
And then at 10th level, you get an additional fighting style. And then at 15th level, you get your critical move down to 18 through 20.
Yes. Superior critical.
And then at 18th level, you attain the pinnacle of resilience in battle. At the start of each of your turns, you regain hit points equal to 5 plus your constitution modifier if you have no more than half of your hit points left.
So, yeah, 18th level, you get that. So... You just, like, apparently you're like a troll by 18th level. You just regenerate like mad.
Yeah, because you're so awesome.
Yeah, because, you know, you're uber cool, awesome, super bad.
Yay. So that's the fighter, pretty much.
That's the fighter.
In a nutshell. Rogue, thief.
Yeah, I don't understand this class, how they did it.
What don't you understand?
I don't understand how the skills work as far as what a thief or slash rogue needs to do. as far as, like, you know, finding traps, removing traps, hiding in shadows, all that jazz. I don't understand how it works.
Well, you choose four from acrobatics, athletics, deception, insight, intimidation, investigation, perception, performance, persuasion, sleight of hand, and stealth. And move from there. So, at first level, you choose two of your skills you're proficient in. One of them, your skills, proficiencies, and one you're proficient with in thieves' tools. Proficiency bonus is double for any ability check that you make using either of these proficiencies, so that's kind of cool. You get a plus four bonus instead at first level.
I see that you still get sneak attack, which is used to be the old school backstab.
But it's a little bit different now.
Yeah.
You can declare it no matter what angle you're at, so you can be flat on with the guy and you can use your sneak attack.
Yeah, you don't have to be from, like, the side or from behind.
Which I always thought that the purpose of that was because you were behind or taking an advantage or something.
Right. Backstab.
Then they just pretty much threw Thieves' Cant in there for no particular reason.
Yeah. Cunning action. So at second level, your quick thinking and agility allow you to move and act quickly. You can take bonus action on each of your turns in combat. It's almost like that one fighter skill, it sounds
like. Yeah.
This action can be used only to dash, disengage, or hide action. It's similar to that fighter surge thingy that we talked about.
Yep.
And then, yes, there is a thief archetype. It's an archetype in the player's handbook. So the rogue is like the core class, and archetype, I guess, is a subclass?
It's kind of like a focus for your class.
Okay. So you could be a thief, as detailed in the player's handbook.
Mm-hmm. And one thing we did forget to mention is that every class has the ability to raise your ability scores by 2 or by 1, depending on...
Yeah.
Then they have a bunch of other stuff for the rogue, but we'll let you read that yourself. Let's head over to wizard.
Yes, and then the wizard / magic user.
So, the wizard works pretty much the same way a cleric does.
Pretty much.
Three cantrips and two first-level spells.
Two first-level spells, yeah.
Which, okay. And now they're 1d6 hit points.
Yep, Zev D4. So all you crybabies who thought magic users were weak before, you get an all different hit dice. Hooray.
You get the ability of light crossbows now.
Yeah.
So, hey, all right, cool. I kind of allowed that with a lot of wizard magic users, too. I would give them, like, hand crossbows or something like that. Because I don't see what the big deal is about a hand crossbow or a light crossbow.
Looking at the spells and where we're going to get into later in these, and for the magic user, the wizard in this version, why would he even bother with weapons?
Well, we'll get to that in a little bit.
Yeah, we'll talk about that in a little bit.
So if you have, I forgot to mention with the spells, if you have an offensive spell, you would have to roll your spell attack modifier, which is your bonus proficiency bonus plus your intelligent modifier, and that will add to your modifier.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a spell that someone has to save on, for example, it's 8 plus your proficiency bonus plus your intelligent modifier, and that's that'll be their difficulty class to save.
Yes.
Which would probably... Let's see, so 10 automatically at first level, and say your intelligence modifier, so 14 will be,
okay.
If say you have an 18 in intelligence. So right off the bat, your best wizard in the party has a difficulty class of 14 against most difficulty classes for saving versus their spells. Pretty big, wouldn't you think?
Yeah, I would say so, yeah. Don't have a problem with that.
The one thing that they changed that I don't agree with is the whole... You wasted all your spells, but go ahead and take a little rest and you get all your spells back.
Yeah, just take a little... Just take a breather!
Yeah. Now, I don't know if maybe the player's handbook goes into more detail saying that based on the level, it would take more of a rest to regain the spells back, but it seems to be from here. It doesn't really matter. They also
You regain spells when you take a rest bit dramatically faster than other editions.
And at first level, you gain 6 first level spells of your choice. That's it. In your spell book.
Yeah.
There was none of this how we did in first. You roll to see if you have it, or the DM says, oh, your master gave you all the first level spells listed in the player's handbook just to sake of getting through things quicker. Sometimes you've done that. But I get 6.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
That's all you get. No. Well, you'll learn more later on, but...
Then they got the whole thing from 4th edition, the ritual casting, which... Blah.
Yeah.
Those are out-of-combat spells. Arcane Recovery, Arcane Tradition, our Improved Ability Score, Spell Mastery.
Spell Mastery. Oh, this one.
Yeah.
So at 18th level... You have achieved such mastery over certain spells that you can just cast them at will.
Yep.
Choose a first level wizard spell and a second level wizard spell that are in your spell book and cast those spells at your lowest level at their lowest level without expending a spell slot. Wow.
What about
and knowing how magic missile works in this game, I know which one I'm picking.
Yeah, and why not add a little notch to that. Signature spells.
Yes.
Any third level spells?
Well, it's magic missile fireball. Done. Just cast them at will. These aren't... I'm sorry, this sounds like almost like godlike powers that your character is getting now.
Hmm. Yeah. I do like... I've always kind of liked this, how you can focus your wizard to be a certain school of magic.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I mean, that's kind of lifted from second edition.
Yeah,
you can focus on a school of magic. That's okay.
And be a necromancer or an evocationist or
a conjurer summoner.
Yeah, that's kind of a cool idea.
Yeah, so you can specialize.
It talks about your spell book and the whole how you can replace your spell book, how long it takes to write it in. Pretty much standard.
Yeah, pretty much standard stuff. Some more fluff, just. You know, an idea about how your character is. And that rounds out the wizard, I suppose.
Yeah, so that rounds out the classes. Now, stopping here for a second, the D&D basic rules. If we look at the first page, Nick.
The very first page?
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm going back up to the credits. Basic rules.
Yes. Additional contributions provided by... Do you see the names listed there?
Additional contributions. Yes, Kim Mohan. Kim Mohan?
Wait, where are you reading Kim Mohan?
Additional contributors. Didn't you say?
Yeah, additional... consultation provided by. Sorry.
Consultation provided by. Yeah, I saw that.
Now, we have Jeff Grubb. Mm-hmm. Kenneth Height, Kenneth Cole,
I know.
Robin Laws, S. John Ross, the RPG Pundit.
Yeah, that threw me for a loop.
Vincent Ventura, and Zach S.
RPG Pundit, really?
Isn't RPG
surprised.
Pundit a very big OSR person?
Yeah, I thought so.
And if he did some consultation, he let most of this stuff was cool. I don't know. Maybe they didn't consult it with everything.
Maybe they said... I have no idea how much he contributed or consulted on, but I was under the impression, RPG Pundit was a huge OSR proponent. And I don't see if there was something here that he added, I have no idea what it would be.
And also, additional contributors, Kim Mohan. You would think he was for a little bit of OSR, you'd think.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's where some of the influences come from?
Possibly. I don't know. I was a little shocked by that one, too. A little surprised, I should say.
I didn't even know Kim Mohan was still around for D&D stuff.
Me, too. I thought he totally left the industry, but I guess I'm wrong.
Hey, we're... where when it comes to money, you'll do whatever it takes.
I guess so.
So chapter 4, kind of a boring chapter in itself. Pretty good for new people if you just want to build round off your character doing name. And then we talk about the sexier character, which they go a little too much detail for me, to be honest.
Yeah.
I'm not going to
lie. Yeah, we talked about that once before, and we'll just leave it at that.
Yeah, I just think you just leave it as male or female character. The rest could be left up to the player's imagination.
Right.
Doesn't need to be defined. Doesn't need to be defined in a book. I don't care what anybody says.
They did a pretty decent job with the alignments, I suppose.
I'm glad they brought all the alignments back.
Yes. I like the 9 alignment circle, if you want to call it.
Mm-hmm. And they talk about the common languages.
I like what they did with the languages. One of the things I thought was quirky with first edition and other editions is all the amounts of languages.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, what are the odds that you're going to, like, you know, run into a Shidu and you need to learn Shidu, you know? Uh-huh. Or I like that they kept the languages relatively, the list small, you know?
Deep speech by Mind Flayers, that's funny. Beholders actually speak a language.
Yeah.
That's cool.
I like to have infernals, primordials. I like the exotic languages, how they keep relatively simple, small list.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't a huge list of different languages. I mean, you're gonna you roll on this chart. It's like, what are the? I mean, all dragons speak Draconic, which makes sense. So I like that.
And then let's go over to now the personal characteristics. What'd you think about that?
I like it for someone who is starting into a role-playing game. I see stuff here that, in my opinion, might have been lifted from Hackmaster. For example, the flaws.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was lifted from Hackmaster, and because you have quirks and flaws in that game, and that kind of rounds out your character. And I kind of like that. That's pretty cool.
I've done something similar, but not with flaws or things. I've done the what I call the arc system. I have players either write down at minimum 1 ally, 1 rival, and 1 contact.
Mm-hmm.
Just to kind of flesh out characters a little bit more so I can kind of get a storyline going.
Mm-hmm.
But this goes into a little more details. Inspiration, I don't know where they picked that from or why that was kind of added in. It's like, hey, you did a really great job. Here's inspiration so you can use it for your role.
Yeah, I don't know how that works either. Yeah.
It doesn't really define it. It just says whatever the DM decides.
Yeah.
So I guess the DM decides, okay, that was a really funny joke. You made everybody laugh for about 20 minutes, so next time you get a +2, use it however you want to use it.
Yeah. Kind of do that anyway now. So why that has to be defined in the rules, I don't know either.
What's wrong with just, you know, oh, that was really cool, +10 to your experience points, or that was really cool.
Yeah, you know, it's like, hey, you guys did a good job of, like, you know, figuring out getting information out of that guy. Everybody, gets 50 experience points or something like that.
I guess they're defining it for the new person, I'm thinking.
That's fine. And that's okay. I mean, it is a basic rule set. And, you know, for someone who's like, hey, I've heard of this game. How does it work? I don't know. So, yeah, that's why that's in there, I suppose.
And then you get to the background. So that's kind of like the secondary skills in first edition. Except they go into more detail of what things like an accolade. And then you can kind of take the things that they'd asked you for before, the flaws, the ideals, the bonds. And then you could just roll random on the chart to help you out in case you can't think of anything.
Yeah, that's pretty cool too. I think, again, this is just something that's...
But you notice something else too? If you pick one of their backgrounds, you get bonuses.
Uh-huh. Now, yeah, like skill proficiencies, languages, and equipment.
Yeah.
For example, the Acolyte. If you pick that one, you're in service to a god. You automatically get insight and religion skill proficiencies.
Now, I wonder if that counts towards your skill set that you have or not. It doesn't really say, does
it? I don't think it does.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of a way to bend the rules there. You get basically extra skills. Again, and I'm looking at this like, these are like, they're like character templates. They are.
Yeah,
that's what they are. They're character templates like out of 2nd edition or 3rd edition or out of Hackmaster.
You know where this was really predominant? It started in D20 Modern.
Yeah.
To Star Wars, and now I think 4th edition had some of this, and now 5th, so.
Yeah, this is like those, like in your splat books, these are your different character templates. This is all that, what that is. It's the same thing, different name.
So then we go to Chapter 5, Equipment. Okay, so we start off, this is how your character's wealth is, 5d4 times 10. 5d4 times 10. Rogue and Wizard get 4d4 times 10.
Yep.
All right. The coinage system looks the same at first glance. I don't think really notice anything different, did you?
Yeah, it's essentially a gold piece system.
Okay, selling treasure, good. Glad to define this, because a lot of people always have problems with this. It's if normal stuff is always half the value that's listed in the player's handbook.
Oh, and they kept Electrum pieces.
Yeah, they did. One thing...
you just move along from
yeah,
that
Yeah, whatever.
One.
I don't care.
I like Electrum.
Yeah, have 2 Electrum, Nick, for saying that. Thanks.
Yay.
There's your inspiration for today.
Goody.
By the way, you can trade your inspiration, too, to another player.
Yeah.
Yeah, anyway. But one thing I had to laugh at, it said under magic items, finding someone to buy a potion or a scroll isn't too hard.
Really?
No, it's not. I just had, when I read that, I started laughing out loud. But other items are out of the realm of most of the wealthiest nobles. So, yeah, potions and scrolls, you can find it by throwing a rock. You'll find one.
Yeah. Now, under equipment, they have something here. I don't know if this was in the, in any of the splat books in the past, but I know Hackmaster had this. And this just stood out for me, those equipment packs.
Oh, yeah.
That was out of Hackmaster 4th edition. You have all these different like starter packs that you can buy, and they're a bundle of stuff that an adventurer might need. Like for your thief, you have a burglar's pack. It costs you 16 gold, and it's got the backpack, a bag of 1,000 ball bearings, 10 feet of string, a bell, 5 candles, a crowbar, a hammer, 10 pitons, a hooded lantern, 2 flasks of oil, 5 days' rations, a tinderbox, and a water skin. The pack also has 50 feet of hemp ropes strapped to the side of it. So for 16 gold, you get the special burglar's pack. Buy one, get one free today.
Yes.
So, and they have all these different packs that you can buy. So you don't have to hunt through the player's handbook and say, okay, I need this and this and this. You just make it easy for you, and they made up packs, which is fine. But this is not an original idea.
No, Joe did that with us way back in the day. You know, the reason why we did it, it was called we were being lazy and didn't feel like writing everything down.
Right.
He would just say standard adventurer's kit is the following going forward, and we always knew adventuring kit, and
right.
We were cool. So,
yeah, I'm just saying when someone looks at this, I'm like, oh, that's a really good idea. How original? No, it's not. It's been used.
Been done.
So, hey, but you could buy manacles.
They do get into defining a bunch of the weapons just in case you're not sure what they look like or what they're like. Studded leather, they get into made from tough, flexible leather. Studded leather is reinforced with closed set rivets or spikes. You know, in case you don't know what it is, that's a good definition.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can Google it and you could find some really cool pictures of what they look like.
Yeah.
Weapons, they go into more about proficiencies of weapons, how different classes, they give you the cost, the damage, what type, bludgeoning, slashing, piercing.
Yeah. I like that the for different types of containers, they give you the capacities of each one.
Yes, very good.
I mean, that's one of those things as a player or even as a DM's, like how much does this jug actually hold or this bottle? I mean, at least this gives you a ballpark idea of capacity. That could be useful. So now some of those arguments are done away with. So I like that.
And then they have various trade goods, usual stuff that you'll find, blah, 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 defining food and drink and lodging, sample menus, so you can go there, lifestyles, you know, how your
lifestyle expenses. I love this.
Yeah, it's kind of cool. Stuff you can read into more detail, nothing we needed to go over. Trinkets, and then we have our Chapter 6 customization options, which talks about multi-classing.
Yeah.
Something that, Nick, you did point out, saying... you were saying if you pick multi-class characters, you get the hit dice for both classes, but there's nothing that says to divide them in half like we usually do.
Yeah, I'm looking at Chapter 6, and then they're talking about customization options here, and they talk about multi-classing. And, again, there's no limits of race. Even humans can multi-class. But under the section, it says hit points and hit dice. I have to read this, and maybe I can read it out loud. Maybe I'll understand it better. It says, you gain the hit points from your new class as described for levels after first. You gain the first level hit points for a class only when you are a first level character. Okay. You add together the hit dice granted by all your classes to form your pool of hit dice. If the hit dice are the same die type, you simply pull them together. Your classes give you hit dice of different types. Keep track of them separately. As I can tell, is you're just making a pool of hit dice. And
at first level.
At first level, if you're multi-class, and when you add those dice together, you don't divide between the number of classes you have. I don't see that saying that anywhere in these rules.
But it does say, like in 3rd edition, when you advance... You pick to advance in one class, not both classes. So you could be a second level, you could be a third level character, which is first level fighter, second level wizard, but you're still considered a third level character.
Oh, is that how they're doing
That's it? How they did it.
Okay, now that makes a little more sense.
Yeah, they did it. They went back to the 3rd edition roots for that thing. And
I see. Okay.
I'm surprised because a lot of people hated that method.
Well, you know.
But you're right. At first level, it doesn't say anything about dividing the hit points in half for the two classes.
No.
So my thing is, why not everyone be multi-class at this point?
Yeah, exactly. You might as well have a whole bunch of multi-class magic users, and we'll get into the reason why that later on when we actually talk about the spells.
There's no feats in this basic thing, but it does talk a little bit about it.
Yeah.
And then we go to part 2, Chapter 7, using ability scores.
Playing the game.
The one thing I thought was kind of an interesting thing was the advantage and disadvantage rule.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if I understood that. It took me a couple of times to read that through, and I think I understand how that works.
Basically, it's depending on the ability or the DM or whatever, the monster, they have the ability to give you the advantage, disadvantage. So if I'm the DM and I'm saying, okay, Nick, you're doing this and this ability you have gives you an advantage, you're going to say, okay, cool, I'm rolling 2d20s, and I get to pick the higher of the two rolls. Okay, Nick, in the other scenario, Nick, you're climbing that wall, but it's slippery, so you have a disadvantage. Roll twice.
Right.
Keep the lower of the two rolls.
Okay.
That's basically the advantage-disadvantage.
I see.
Fighters have that ability to declare disadvantages during combat. So if, say, the monster's attacking a wizard, the fighter can jump in and say, disadvantage, I kind of jump in and try to block. So that means that the monster attacking would have to roll 2, and he would take the lower of the two
right. For
his hit attack. So that's kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
Talks about proficiency bonuses, ability checks, which basically revolves off a d20 and a difficulty class.
And yeah, it's like 3rd edition, basically. Yeah.
They talk a little bit more about skills, passive checks, working together, strength. Dexterity to define all that, everything, blah, blah, blah. Saving throws. I think you wanted to talk about that, didn't you?
Yeah, saving throws. Let's see where
page 62.
Page 62.
Saving throw, also called a save, represents the ability to resist a spell, trap, poison, disease,
right,
or similar threat. So, same thing.
So, basically, you make a save, you roll a d20, add the appropriate modifier. So it's really based off, from what I understand, ability scores.
Mm-hmm. For example,
and there is a difficulty class for the saving throw. So if there's like a target number, so say, let's say it's 15. So your difficulty class is 15. If you roll a d20 and
add your bonus,
add the appropriate modifier from your dexterity or whatever it may be. So whatever your, let's say it's like a, you're trying to, I don't know, there's a trap door and you're trying to, you know, not fall down the trap door. I don't know. So make, I don't, or I don't know, maybe a save versus poison. I guess it'd be like you'd use your constitution modifier. I guess that would be the only example I could think of right now. That'd be simple.
For example, the DC for a saving throw allowed by a spell is determined by the caster's spell ability and proficiency bonus, which we talked about before when they cast a spell. That's what they would have to beat. Anyway, so same thing. And then we go to chapter 8, adventuring, pretty much movement, how to determine the move, the time, keeping track, days, weeks, rounds. 6 second span of time is talked about.
Mm-hmm.
Yada, yada, yada. Travel pace, ability while traveling, marching order. They talk about the environment, falling, suffocating, vision and light.
Yeah.
Suffocating.
They get into detail here. And that's good, you know, for, mm-hmm. for someone who's not sure what they can do in a game, they need it defined for them. It's right here.
They talk about food and water, how important that is to a character. Character can go without food or water for a number of days equal to 3 plus his or her constitution modifier. So, after that, at the end of each day beyond that limit, a character automatically suffers one level of exhaustion. And there's the levels of what a character will be in combat. We'll get to that in just a second.
Yeah.
Resting. Short rest is basically 1 hour long. Basically, you're allowed to tend to wounds, eat, drink, read, memorize spells. Character can spend one or more hit dice at the end of a short rest, up to the character's maximum number of hit dice. So, if I'm left level, that means I'm 5 hit dice. I can do up to 5 hit dice to recover my hit points.
Yeah, so what they do is, yeah, you spend one or more hit dice at the end of a short rest up to the character's maximum number of hit dice, which is equal to the character's level.
Yeah.
For each hit dice spent in this way, the player rolls the die and adds the character's constitution modifier to it. The character regains hit points to the... What?
Yeah.
That's a lot of hit points!
So basically, in that, you might as well just say during that hour-long rest you gain all your hit points back. Right?
I guess so. Why do you even need healing?
Well, because you're not always going to... A smart DM's not going to let you rest for an hour all the time, to be honest.
So you roll... I want to read this again, make sure I understand this right.
You read it right.
So, let's say I was a 5th level fighter.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And we're going to spend an hour resting, so I can take 5d10, right?
Mm-hmm.
I roll that, and add my constitution modifier, and that's how many hit points I regain?
Yes, but the little thing that in the last line of this whole thing says that you have the option of using anywhere from 1 to your maximum level, but then you can't use... So say you decide to use 3 of your 5, right?
Uh-huh.
Next time you do a short rest, you only have 2 of your 5 left to use.
Okay, fine.
So let's say you have 2-hour rests in, I don't know, an adventure period, and you use up all your hit dice. Now next time you do an hour rest, you don't regain anything until you do a long rest. If you look at the very last line. A character regains some of his spent hit dice upon finishing a long rest, as explained below. So, once you run out of your character's hit dice to rest up with on the short rest, you have to use a long rest to regain them back.
And a long rest is 8 hours, and you regain all your hit points lost.
Yep.
What? So, hold on a second here.
Okay.
My character could have one hit point left. One. And all he has to do is go to bed for 8 hours. Next day, I am fully recovered all my hit points.
According to this.
Wow. Just... Wow. Okay. My opinion here.
Refrain your opinion to the end.
Okay.
Thank you.
I will. Okay. Wow.
If the rest is interrupted by a period of strenuous activity, at least 1 hour of walking, fighting, casting spells, or similar adventuring activity, the character must begin the rest again to gain any benefit from it. At the end of a long rest, the character regains all lost hit points. The character also regains spent hit dice up to the number of dice equal to half of the character's total number of them, minimum one dice. For example, if a character has 8 hit dice, he or she can regain 4 spent hit dice upon finishing the long rest. So basically, in the scenario of the 5 hit dice, he would get, if your character did the long rest, he would get half of what it is back. And of course, going by this system, what they said...
You round down
instead of rounding up. So you get 2 of those hit dice back. So next time you do a short rest, you only have 2 of the 5 hit dice to roll to gain hit points back on that short rest.
Mm-hmm.
So that's resting. Then they cover the whole thing between adventures. So when you're
let's get into more detail.
Yeah.
So what you're doing in between adventures, folks.
Yeah, so when you're not playing, this is what happens. I guess that kind of needs to be covered with new players. Because back when we were gaming, we just would normally just either say one of two things. Okay, we'll pick up right back here next week, folks.
Yeah.
Or, if the characters were in town, we would say, okay, next time we meet up, Nick, your guy's armor will be repaired and his sword will be almost ready to go. Or
okay.
Something like
that. Yeah. Usually people say they're going back to town or wherever it may be. It's like, okay, we're all going to rest, go to research spells.
Right.
I'm going to go to my temple, talk to my god, whatever. You know, stuff like that.
Or they could have said something like, oh, in the week that we're off, Nick, your character, happened to gain 20 gold or something, but he went miscellaneous stuff. Now they define it because newer players really don't know this or don't do this because they just think, okay, what happens in downtime? Well, in an MMO, my character is doing crafting or gaining gold, so why can't we do that in this game?
Well, you can.
Now you can.
Why it has to be defined, I don't know, but yes. You're training, researching, crafting, recuperating, all the standard stuff.
Yep. Okay, so we go to chapter 9, combat. Combat.
Finally.
So let's do the step-by-step combat here.
It's pretty simple.
Yeah. Step one, DM determines the surprise. So there's no real surprise, kind of. Well, there is, I guess, if you want to roll everything out, but DM determines the surprise.
And a round is 6 seconds, folks.
Yes. Establish your positions. Okay. Everybody rolls for initiative.
Yeah.
Everybody takes turns. Refresh.
Yeah.
So everything's the same.
Initiative, yeah, 5 steps, basically.
Initiative is rolled on a d20. Add your modifiers. That's your number.
I think it's a dexterity modifier, right?
Yes. Or if you have a feat.
Well, no, though, then, folks, dex is very important, because if we're going to do combat, you want a high dex.
So on your turn, you can move up to the distance in your speed and take 1 action. That's pretty much standard how we've always had it.
Yeah, but they also changed about what you could do for actions a little bit.
They also talk about breaking up your move. They also allow you to take a couple steps, do something, and then take a couple more steps, which I've always kind of let people do.
Mm-hmm.
movement is difficult, terrain being prone, reactions, other things you could do, moving around, creature size, attacks, what you can do on your attack.
Yeah. Now, one of the things I have a little bit of a contention with is in movement,
mm-hmm.
and when they're talking about interacting with objects around you, they give a list of things that you can do when you, in tandem with your movement in action. So, say for example, your movement, you could do your full movement and then your action, we'll just say, sake of argument, you're going to hit with your sword.
Okay.
So, in your action, in your on your initiative, you could move,
uh-huh.
attack,
uh-huh.
and throw a lever or a switch. All in one action.
Well, that's just like the move, open a door, and then attack.
Yeah, but I see how I wouldn't think you could do all those in one action. Because in 6 seconds...
Open, close a door, withdraw a potion from your backpack, pick up a drop axe.
Take... Yeah, so, yeah, they're... So they're saying that you could attack,
stuff
move,
some food in your mouth,
and then get a potion out of your backpack, all in the same action.
Fish a few coins from your belt pack, drink all the ale in your flagon, pull a torch from a sconce, take a book from a shelf you can reach, extinguish a small flame, don a mask...
Yeah. I have a little bit of a contention with it. That's a lot of things that you can do in 6 seconds.
Now, like, I'm wondering if
cast a spell, move, and then turn a key in a lock. Do all that in 6 seconds.
Well, that's not true. Well, depending on the spell, don't forget, too.
Well, it says here, your movement and your action.
Spell casting is a different category itself.
Okay, then I stand corrected. Let's just stick with combat, either missile weapons or melee.
Most spells do have a casting time of one action, so the spellcaster often uses his or her action in combat to cast such a spell. And in Chapter 10, it has different... Chapter 10 in spells goes over the rules for spellcasting in case there's an additional action needed. So, then you have your typical dash, which is your charge, your disengage, your dodge. You can do help. hide, and then ready action.
Yeah.
I like ready action. Search, use an object. Making attack, they go over that. Doing ranged attacks. Did they say anything about hitting into combat? No, I think they waived that rule, didn't they?
Yeah.
With ranged attacks, if your buddies are in... Maybe that might be in the player's
hand. Ranged attacks.
No, I don't see it anywhere about if your party members are...
Nope. Ranged attacks and close combat. Hold on. Aiming a ranged attack is more difficult when a foe is next to you when you make a ranged attack with the... Okay. No. There's no penalties for firing into melee anymore. Don't worry about that.
Yeah, I don't see it anywhere. And I don't remember reading anything about it. Damage, healing, damage.
There are critical hits in this version, too.
Mm-hmm. Dropping to 0 hit points, you become unconscious.
Yeah.
Now, dying, you have to roll 3 death... You have to fail 3 death saving throws.
It's really hard for a character to die in this game. Really hard.
If you roll a 1, it becomes 2 failures. If you roll a 20, you automatically get the 1 hit point back to stabilization character.
I'm not quite dead.
No.
I don't want to go in the cart.
You can get any combination of save or stabilization versus... So if you have 0 hit points and you fail a save and then you stabilize, but then you get hit, you roll it again... And that same one the last time, I believe, still counts in the roll of... Because you weren't stabilized above 0 to get to 1, so it still counts. So you still had that 1 failure.
Mm-hmm.
So if you get hit again and then fail again, that means you have 2 failures. So it's kind of cumulative that way. But you get up to... What is it? Your hit points plus something for negativeness, right?
Yes.
For example, a cleric with a maximum of 12 hit points currently has 6 hit points. If she takes 18 points of damage from attack, she's reduced to 0. But the 12 damage remain. Because the remaining damage equals her hit points maximum, the cleric dies. So basically, if you go over your maximum number of hit points in negative zone, then you automatically just die.
Yeah.
Okay. Stabilizing can be done pretty easy with a medicine check, skill, or spell. Monsters have the same exact ability. DMs don't usually enact it unless it's a special NPC. You can also declare to knock a creature out.
Yay.
One thing I didn't like was temporary hit points. Instead of when you get, for example, you can do temporary hit points. So you have two pools of hit points now. Your normal hit points, and these little temporary hit points for whatever time period the spell or the rule allows.
The temporary hit points basically make you more buff.
Yeah, the temporary hit points reduce first, then your normal hit points.
Certain spells do this, apparently.
Yeah. Didn't like that.
Mounted combat. No, I didn't either.
Whatever. Underwater combat. Spells. I know this is your biggest bone here, Nick.
Oh, my God.
Part 3.
Where do 10. I go? Without turning this into a tirade of expletive deletes. Spell casting in this game is very, very much in the tradition of your MMOs. I mean, I don't know how any other way I could put it, if you like that sort of thing. Like we also talked about cantrips. Cantrips you can cast at will without using a spell slot, without being prepared in advance. So basically, you can cast cantrips all day, and you're probably thinking to yourself, well, it's just a cantrip. I mean, you know, tie or mend. Oh, no, no, no. Au contraire, mon frère.
No, just to interrupt real quick, it's not all day. It's as long as you have the spell slots for it.
Oh, yeah, and that's quite a... But the cantrips, what we would think of as cantrips, Vince, is totally different in version.
For example,
very first spell on the list, Acid Splash. This is a cantrip, okay? You hurl a bubble of acid. And if target fails its dexterity saving throw, it takes a d6 acid damage.
Acid damage, not ass damage.
Acid. Not ass splash. That would be terrible. That'd be like diarrhea.
Sorry, folks.
Ass splash. Anyway...
Not a first-person spell.
This is a cantrip that does a d6 damage of acid. Okay? To me, that's not a cantrip.
No.
Cantrip was like...
Minor damage. One,
was
two.
Was like the B spell. like I said, mend or tie. They were little itty-bitty things. These are spells now that do damage. And it increases depending on what level you are. You go to 5th level, it does 2d6, 3d6 at 11th, and 4d6 at 17th. So, obviously, our definitions of cantrips and theirs, or at least my definition and theirs, completely different.
Let's talk about Firebolt.
The fireball spell.
No,
yes.
Bolt. First bolt.
Firebolt.
Yes.
Yes, there's a spell now called...
That's a cantrip.
It's a cantrip. And we'll get the fireball, too. It's sort of like your acid ball thing, but you shoot a little bolt of fire out from your finger, and it does a 1d10 damage of fire damage. This is a cantrip. And it does 2d10 at 5th level, 3d10 11th, and 4d10 at 15th. Yeah. So, yeah, you could just cast firebolts. I don't know however many slots you have, you cast firebolt. But these cantrips, they don't take up slots. You just, I guess you just pick the cantrip and cast it, right?
Yeah, that's basically you have the list.
And you pick it, and you cast it, and that's it.
Yeah,
you don't have to memorize it.
No, it's you just know them so well that you just need to be able to cast them.
Yeah. Isn't that wonderful?
So let's go with our old traditional, the old magic missile. First level.
Yeah.
Spell. Now, we all know magic missile. Let me just pull it up here. You get each magic missile does 2 to 5 hit points, d4 plus 1 of damage.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right, that's fair enough.
Yeah, at first level, in like in first edition, you get one magic missile, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it goes up increments. You get additional dart but every other level, I believe, right?
For second levels of experience, the magic user gains an additional missile, third, fifth, and seventh.
So at third, you would have, or fifth level, you'd have three magic missiles, right?
Yes, that's correct.
Well, in this version, you have three magic missiles at first level.
At 3d4 plus 1.
At 3d4 plus 1.
Mm-hmm.
So you have three missiles of 1d4 plus 1, so 3d4 plus 3 missiles at first level.
Yep.
And when you cast the spell using a spell slot of second level or higher, the spell creates one more dart for each slot level above first. So you get one more dart magic missile per slot above second. It doesn't go in increments anymore. So you can just... Yeah.
So, okay. So, say you're playing your character Nick, and you're like, oh, let me use my cantrip of Shocking Grasp. It used to be a first-level spell.
Now it's a cantrip.
And it did, in first edition, it did 1d8 points of damage.
Mm-hmm.
Plus one hit point per the level of the magic user. Okay.
Yeah, 1d8 plus one per level, right? Yeah.
So okay. That was the first edition spell. Now, it's a cantrip, and how much damage does it do now, Nick?
It does d8 lightning damage, but mm-hmm. when you go to 5th level, it does 2d8, 11th level, 3d8, and 17th is 4d8.
It's a cantrip.
That's a cantrip. Yeah. Yeah.
Ray of Frost.
Oh, yes, I just went to that. Ray of Frost. That is a cantrip.
Mm-hmm.
You take a d8 cold damage. But, again, it goes in increments. 5th level, 2d8. 11th level, 3d8. 17th level, 4d8. And this is a cantrip. So, yeah. You get a whole bunch of cantrips that do damage, and you don't even have to memorize them. But let's look at some really big ones, shall we?
Sure.
Let's look at the old standby. Fireball.
All right, good old.
You know,
fireball.
Let's look at Fireball. The old. This is what magic user does not know. Fireball.
We all love it.
We all love it. We sure do. It's in Fireball in first edition. It's a D6 damage.
Mm-hmm.
It's a third level spell. So you would gain the ability maybe to cast Fireball if you memorize it and you put it in your spell book. It would be 5d6 damage, right?
One six-sided dice for each level experience of the caster.
So 5d6, right?
If you were fifth level, right, yes.
Yeah. Fireball is still a third level spell in this version, but at fifth level you get 8d6 fire damage.
Ugh.
You actually get three more dice. And at higher levels, when you cast a spell using a spell slot of 4th level or higher, the damage increases by 1d6 for each level slot above 3rd. Yeah! Super powerful spell now. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. Should we continue?
You had one more example.
Yeah, actually I did. There was one, just because we're just focusing on...
spells we were used to.
Spells that we're used to and everybody uses. Let's go with something a little bit more, I don't know. not everybody gets because it's a higher level spell, a Meteor Swarm. Okay? Now, Meteor Swarm in first edition, just to compare, so we understand here, the damage from the Meteor Swarm is 10 to 40 hit points of damage. Okay? All right? Mm-hmm. Now, Meteor Swarm in here, still a 9th level spell. Also, the range is totally different. In first edition, it was 40 feet plus, well, 4 inches, which is equates to 40 feet, plus 1 inch per level, which 10 inches per level. The range of Meteor Swarm for this version, 1 mile. 1 mile. Each creature in a 40-foot radius sphere centered on each point you choose must make a dexterity saving throw. The sphere spreads around corners. A creature takes, hold on to your socks, folks, 20 d6 fire damage and 20 d6 bludgeoning damage on a failed save. Or half the damage on a successful one.
Oh, boy.
So, you could, theoretically, if you drop this down on one lonely orc, it will take 40 d6 damage if it fails its save. I'm just or on a, I don't know, on a white dragon. If it fails its save, it's taken the potential, if it fails its save, 40, not 14, 40 d6 damage, 20 from fire, 20 from bludgeoning. Yeah. in a range of a mile. Yeah. Isn't that cool? Yeah.
So I was taking a look at, I just wondered, because I forgot to look this up when we originally were reading this, the sleep spell. Did you take a look at that one yet?
Oh, sleep spell. I was looking at magic weapon.
Okay, we'll get to that in one second. But sleep spell.
Yeah. Yeah, let's look at sleep here. Yeah.
So they simplified it by just saying you roll 5d8, and that's how many hit points of creatures you can affect. Starting with the lowest number of hit point creature moving upwards. Okay.
Okay.
Now that's kind of, I think, made the spell a little bit weaker, to be honest, because in my games, my creatures have pretty high hit points, so...
Yeah, it was before it was based on hit dice.
Yeah. So if you had, I don't know, a bunch of one-hit dice creatures, you can get generally 4 to 16 of them, so you could pretty much wipe out the whole group to sleep.
Mm-hmm. Now they basically, on the opposite end, like you're saying here, they nerfed sleep.
Yeah, so not. I just want to show an example of they. Not only did they increase things, but they also nerfed things too.
They did nerf things, and there are other things here like magic.
You said magic weapon.
Magic weapon. This is a second level spell. Okay. Mm-hmm. Second level spell. I was not familiar with this spell. This must have been something new they added. Because I looked through them, I'm like, there's this magic weapon spell? Basically, you touch a non-magical weapon until the spell ends, which is, duration is up to 1 hour, and you need to concentrate. The weapon becomes a magic weapon with a +1 bonus to attack rolls and damage.
Oh, isn't that like the cleric spirit weapon thing?
No, because this is used by, I think this is a magic user spell.
But I meant it's like that in the sense that, you know,
how
a cleric was able to do that and use his magic weapon +1 for a limited number of time. But
like
just,
spiritual hammer or something like that?
Yeah, yeah. Kind of the same thing, but you could do any weapon instead.
And at higher levels, fourth level, it becomes +2, and at sixth level, the weapon becomes +3 for an hour. I'm looking at that, I'm like, oh, well, okay.
Okay.
These magic items.
Yeah, why not? So that's basically your spells. Moving along, then we have our appendixes, conditions.
My appendix hurts now after reading all of this.
You have your blinded, your charmed, your deafened, your frightened, your grappled, incapacitated, and invisible. That's a condition, yes.
I am blind, deaf, and frightened now.
I like how invisible is a condition.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that, but okay. Paralyzed, petrified, poison, prone, restrained, and stunned.
I'm stunned.
And then unconscious.
This should say a list of things you'll feel after reading these rules.
Yes. Appendix B goes over gods of the multiverse, which is good, because depending on the setting, maybe you don't know gods, and maybe you're, as a new player, you're curious. Well, I'm a cleric, and in real life, most priests kind of worship a god, mm-hmm. like Catholics worship God, and, you know, I can't think of an original one.
Giant spaghetti monster in the sky?
Yeah, there we go. So they give a whole list of gods, which is kind of cool.
And they focus on the Forgotten Realms. Not surprised.
Yeah. Then they go over factions, in case you're interested in factions like the Harpers, which I've always loved reading in Forgotten Realms.
Mm-hmm.
Order of the Gauntlet, the Emerald Enclave, and the Lord's Alliance, and then the... was that Zentarium? Was that how it's pronounced?
Zentarium, I think it is. Zentarium.
The Black Network, pretty much. Then you get your character sheet.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of interesting how they did the character sheet.
Yeah.
Notice there's no saving throws anymore.
Nope. Because it's all based off ability scores.
Yeah. I always hate the whole passive perception thing that they have on.
Yep.
But it's pretty much laid out pretty cool. As somebody's phoning it in now.
Yeah, sorry.
And then they have what comes next, you know, they pretty much here, go to DungeonsandDragons.com to see a list of things that they have there, such as the Player's Handbook, or the Starter Adventurer box set, was it Starter Kit, or whatever it's called. Starter Set, it's called, there we go. Player's Handbook, Monster Manual, Dungeon Master's Guide, all of which are not available, because the Dungeon Master Guide, I believe, comes out in November.
It comes out pretty late.
Which is odd. But you can download from the Wizard site, DungeonsDragons.com, the Dungeon Master's kind of guide. It goes over mostly basic things in the adventure, how to run adventures, and then it gives you like 50-something pages of monsters. Let me go to it here. I have it downloaded. Mostly has 55 pages of monsters. Various monsters you've probably heard across the internet, people complaining about the monsters were really lame. Some of them, like, they have goat, and there is a monster. Giant goat.
All right, the goat.
Yeah. Awakened shrub or something like that. Now, the monster things are all strictly strictly alphabetical order. So, Nick, if I was going to say to you, find me a red adult dragon, where would you look?
Under dragon?
Nope. You would look under A for adult red dragon.
What?
I told you, it's really strict in the way they did it. I don't know why they did that.
I look under A for adult?
You look under A for adult red dragon.
Okay.
I swear to God.
Okay.
Let's see, they have Awakened Shrub.
Awakened Shrub.
Yes. It's a shrub. Armor class is 9. 10 hit points.
Wow.
Let's see here.
Is that like the singing bush? From the Three Amigos?
It could be.
My goodness.
It doesn't really tell you much about it. Actions, the Awakened Shrub. Let me just make this a little bit bigger here.
It's about to sound as useful as a flump.
Pretty much.
The flump.
Scroll here, talk about equipment. Pitch 10. Okay, there we go. Awakened Shrub. Okay. The Awakened Shrub has the following abilities. Actions, rake, melee weapon, attack, plus one to hit, reach 5 feet, one target. It gets one attack, 1d4 minus one.
Ooh.
An awakened shrub is an ordinary shrub given sentience and mobility by magic. So a magic user pretty much can make a shrub to come to life.
Who thought that this was actually useful to put into the game?
Awakened tree.
Now, awakened tree, okay. But a shrub, no.
It gets plus 6 to hit, reaches 10 feet. Damage is 3d6 plus 4.
Okay, that's cool.
They have banshees back, of course. Badger, blink dog, basilisk, bat, bear. By the way, black bear has its own entry. And then you scroll down and brown bear has its own entry.
Okay.
Remember how we had it in first edition? It would just say bear and then below it would be like brown, black.
Uh-huh.
No, they separated everything and did like a write-up for everything.
Okay.
Which I don't know why. Maybe they did that because... I don't know. I still haven't figured out a reason why they did that, and, yeah. Constrictor snake, crocodile, dire wolf has its own entry, death dog. Okay. Doppelganger's back, eagle,
earth. I didn't even know it was gone.
Well, I meant it's back in 5th edition. You know, sometimes they pull monsters out. The elk has its own giant description for it.
An elk.
Yes. Fire Giant has its own category for itself, like unlike how it was Giant before, and then they kind of broke it down that way. Now it's Fire Giant by itself, Cloud Giant by itself.
Okay.
Flame Skull. Tiny Undead, it's called.
Tiny Undead.
Yeah, it's a little skull.
Oh, cute. How nice, how quaint.
Flying Snake, Flesh Golem, by itself, by may I add.
So it sounds like a lot of the standard monsters just expounded tremendously.
Frost Giant, Ghoul, Ghost is now considered its own thing.
Okay.
Ghost has an armor class of 11, just so you know.
Okay.
Ghost has the ability to have a Withering Touch, melee weapon, plus 5 to hit, 46 plus 3 necrotic damage. Ouch. It is considered a challenge rating of 4. So you get 1,100 hit points for killing a ghost. Giant Ape, a category far away from the ape itself, pages apart.
Okay.
Giant Badger, Giant Bat, Giant Boar, all pages away from the regular badger, boar, or bat. Giant Centipede by itself. Giant Eagle, Giant Crab. Giant Crocodile.
Giant Hamster.
Giant Frog. Giant Goat.
Giant Carrot.
Giant Fire Beetle. No, yeah, that's how good they get. Giant Owl. Everybody, they just took every other creature they just did and made a giant.
Giant Trout.
Yeah. So you get a whole...
Rodents of unusual size.
Troll is there. Oh. Twig Blight.
Oh, my God. I don't even... No.
Yes.
No. No. Yes. Stop it.
Twig Blight. Is that 1/8 of a challenge rating?
Yes. We're going to go out and we're going to quest and we're going to attack twigs.
Hey, they get plus 3 to hit and they do 1d4 plus 1 piercing damage.
Well, knowing that I can, like, recover, like, almost all my hit points if I just...
Sneeze.
Burn off a few hit dice just sitting down and picking my nose.
They have an entry for Warhorse again.
Huh.
Yeah. They have an entry for Werewolf. Let's see if they have one for Vampire. Wolf by itself. Yeti. Okay. Young Green Dragon under Young.
Why? That is such a... I'm sorry, that's just not... No.
Yeah, that was a major complaint of a lot of people, I noticed. Zombie. And then they have the
all the monsters are the same type together.
I agree with that. But I don't know why they did it that way. maybe they just kind of threw it together and then alphabetized everything just for quick, because this is just not really the DM's guide. It's just basically for the basic player edition.
I see.
So maybe in when they released the Monster Manual, which I haven't seen yet, it just got released at Gen Con, maybe they organized it better, I hope.
Yeah, well, probably.
Then they go over NPCs, how to customize them. They have Acolyte, Bandit, Berserker, Commoner, Cultist, Guard, Knight, Mage, Priest, Thug. And then they go over building combat encounters with a big green box on the side that says work in progress.
Oh, that's comforting.
Yes.
We don't know what we're doing. We're still working on this.
This information from the Dungeon Master Guide represents the in-progress version of the rules in the book. Updated information will appear in future versions of the D&D basic rules.
Okay.
So they do give you this information, how to build encounters, how to determine how much experience per encounter, or the difficulty of an encounter, and how much XP you should give them based on the party size. So, and then another thing, magic items, another work in progress.
Of course.
They give you Bag of Holding, plus one armor, plus one weapons, Amulet of Health, Boots of Striding, and Springing. Yeah. Gauntlets of Ogre Power, and Gloves of Swimming and Climbing.
Okay.
And they go over a couple other things.
Okay.
Some scrolls, they tell you about that, wands, and then what comes next, talk about going to the website. And that's pretty much all 61 pages of the DM's current version 1 guide on the website for free.
Mm.
So with that said...
Yes.
And you can download these two things from the website. You could be playing 5th edition this weekend at your house with your friends and possibly have a good time.
Possibly.
Notice I said possibly, depending on if you like it or not.
Yes.
But they pretty much said, here's the game, enjoy. And you can say, hey, thanks, I'm going to play, and I never have to do anything else.
Mm-hmm.
Seriously, they pretty much gave their game away and said, here. And you know what? To top that off, in the future, we'll give you free updates. All I'm going to say is...
Hooray.
No, I'm giving I'm giving Wizards of the Coast a clap. For all the time... I'm giving them props.
Okay, good. You're giving them props. You said it at first didn't sound right.
No, I'm giving them props because instead of being greedy bastards, they decide to say, here's our new edition of D&D. Take a look at it. Tell us what you think. Play it. Play it till it's dead. If you like it, here's the full version.
Okay.
That's what I think. I'm saying, cool.
That's cool.
So, okay, now that we've done that, we've reviewed everything... Go ahead, Nick. What are your thoughts?
Where are my problems with it? Jeez, I already closed the PDF.
No, your overall thoughts. Nick's final thoughts of the day.
Okay. I like what they did as far as fleshing out the different races. I like that. I like the ideas that they gave for how an adventuring party is. Basically, I like all the fluff stuff in there. And I don't have a problem with the game mechanic and how certain things work. I have a problem with, particularly the magic system. I think the magic system's way too overpowered. Mm-hmm. It as we described in the spell section, I think is way too overpowered because you have cantrips that do outrageous amounts of damage, which in my opinion makes. It makes magic now frivolous. It just now, it has become the if it wasn't a pencil and paper MMO before, it is now. Also, when you throw in the idea of the whole healing stuff now, where you could just essentially regain all your healing points, if all your hit points, when you take a little breaky.
Okay.
So it's almost impossible for your characters to die, which it takes away all the risk of even adventuring in the first place. There's no sense of To me, I think there's no sense of risk involved at all. I think it takes, it's now, it's just like, you have every, there's every way I think they can make it to where they've buffed the character classes and the races along with all their special abilities and spells to where they're nigh invulnerable. And you just wade into combat whenever you want to and start laying waste to monsters, gain experience points rather quickly. And there's virtually no risk to your character of dying, which takes away a lot of the drama. I didn't even have to play it, but I can see that right here. Mm-hmm. So I could just see it from how the rules are. I mean, that's just my opinion on it.
And that's fair enough. You read through it, and you gave your thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, there are some good things. I like all the fluff stuff they did about dwarves and halflings and the different races to give inspiration for people to play those characters. You know, I like some of the stuff they did with the equipment, with the adventuring packs. I thought that was a pretty cool addition. But seeing how... And the combat system's simple, but I don't like the magic system and how healing works. I don't like it. I think it's broken in that respect.
Okay, and you're entitled to your opinion because you read the rules and you
gave... Yes, I read the rules, and mm-hmm. Like I said, there were good and bad points.
Yeah.
Through the whole thing.
My thoughts about 5th edition or 5B, because I haven't looked at the full 5th edition yet, is I don't think it's really a game for me at all. I think there is things in there that are just too powerful for me to enjoy my game. I know it's supposed to be a game and not realistic. I kind of like a little more of that fear and realism in the game.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I like 1st edition. Now, yep. I know it looks like in paper... characters can't die that easily, but I have other people telling me differently, saying, like Crispy mentioned in the forums, that he was killing people left and right, not on purpose. So I guess it all depends on the DM. If you have maybe an old school DM, they know how to kill people
mm-hmm.
easier than a new person. But I don't know. I like I said, I haven't played it yet. I don't know if I'm going to play it exactly. Upon reading the 5B rules, and then I'm going to read the player's handbook whenever I have a chance. I'll make a final decision, but as it looks right now, I don't really like a lot of the things, such as, like Nick pointed out, the magic user stuff, how they changed it. Oh, I'm sorry, the wizard. I apologize.
Yes. Wizard!
I don't like how the wizard is so powerful. I mean, I know they're doing that to make it more involving for a person. I don't like the whole... You could do this, this, and that. It's just like, come on. Why do you have to have so many options?
Yeah.
That's what gave me...
And what...
Hey, my turn.
Having to define all those options. Do you really have to define them all right in the rules?
That's what kind of gave me a headache about 3rd edition to begin with, was the whole, when you got around to a lot of players... I'm not saying every player did this, but a lot of players, it was like, what do you do? What can I do? Okay, you can do this, this, or that. What does this ability do again? Now, I'm not saying every person does that, but majority of the people that I've played with over the years all do that. So,
mm-hmm.
And it's any edition, pretty much. But I feel in 1st edition, you don't have all these defined abilities that you can do, that players have a better knowledge of what they can and can't do. And once they get a grasp of that, there's none of this, oh, well, looking through 15 pages of papers to figure out what utility spell I'm using or something. But I'm not bashing the edition. It's just not my edition. I don't think it ever will be. But I did give it a read.
Yeah. Some people might like it. It's not my thing.
No, I just have a feeling like it's like every other D20 edition, or I should say 3rd edition and above, it's just going to give me a headache if I ever run it.
Mm.
3rd edition gave me a headache. The Star Wars Revised Core gave me a headache. Saga gave me a headache. So 1st edition just never gave me a headache. I don't know why. Because I remember there was an argument, it's the same D core mechanic. Yeah, well, no, it's not. I don't care what you say. It's not the same thing.
Right.
And with that said, there is 5B in a nutshell.
In a nutshell.
So Nick and I will sign off, let you reflect upon our comments to smash the screen or your iPod, saying how much of an elitist we are for saying these bad words. Keep it original, keep it old school. Good night.
Good night, everybody.
The Roll for Initiative podcast is a production of Wild Games Productions in association with d20radio.com. You can visit us at rfipodcast.com or contact us on our forums at osrgaming.org or even by calling us at 570-865-4210. This podcast is produced for entertainment purposes only. All other uses are prohibited. And remember, if your magic missile spell doesn't automatically hit, you're playing the wrong edition. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time on Roll for Initiative.